screaming, agony, the whole nine. And I wake up. Okay, what the hell is going on? Not only am I dreaming, but I'm now having recurring dreams? I don't like this shit. Not one little bit. I look over and there's no one in the bed next to me. It's probably not a great sign that I have to look to know whether or not I brought someone home last night. I'm not even sure what day it is. I barely know what century it is. I should get out of here. I should see people. Dr. Eldridge says I'm spending too much time alone. Maybe she's right. Being alone allows my mind to drift to places it shouldn't. Never a good thing. Of course it's not a good thing, genius, just figuring that out. And now I'm talking to myself out loud. Dynamite. Insanity is wooing me hard. I stumble out of bed, walk past the massive windows, making sure to give the street below a nice long look at my cock. Although I doubt anyone's looking up here. Everyone's so focused on their own bullshit. Plod into the kitchen past the burnt charcoal brick that used to be toast, still sitting in the toaster, past the fridge, straight to the liquor cabinet. There's an impressive selection from which to choose. Did I buy all this? I must have. I don't remember buying all this. Oh well. Johnny Walker Blue to start the day, which, I mean, it's the smoothest of the bunch, so, duh. My phone is sitting on the counter. There's a text from Evan. Lunch at the station? Phone says it's 10:30 a.m. Still morning. Nice. Earliest I've been up in a while. I pick up and text back. Dunno. Pretty busy. I take a sip of Blue and wait while little thought bubbles appear on the screen. They disappear. They reappear. He must be composing an essay. Finally, his text comes through. No, you're not. Christ. I take another pull from the bottle, sigh, then, sure, I type. Be there in a bit. I can't say no to Evan. I really can't. I don't know why. Most everyone else on the planet I can take or leave, but Evan, I don't know. I actually kind of know. History. Shared experience. But it's more than that. It's what most people would call chemistry. That thing one person has with another person that they can't explain. When people call it chemistry, they're wrong, of course. Chemistry is science, and finding someone you can stand being around, that's alchemy. Some people just get you. Others, not so much. But whatever you call it, Evan and I have always had it since we were kids. I don't remember us ever even having a fight. Is that true? Man, that's crazy. Anyway. I take a couple more hard swigs, give the city one last good cock shot, you're welcome, world, and pull back on the jeans, boots, and t-shirt I left sitting on the living room floor last night. I smelled them. They're fine. Okay, I'll admit it, this car is pretty awesome. I really don't love to drive, but this thing might make me change my tune. It just got delivered last night. Turns out it's Friday. Don't ask me where Sunday through Thursday went. When Evan and I got to the swanky Land Rover dealership last week, I saw a poster of this one on the wall. I don't get hard over cars, I've never been a gearhead, but this one looked badass, so I told the showroom guy, I want that one. He was all, oh, well, that one's not actually for sale. I was like, fuck you mean it's not for sale? You sell cars, right? That's what you do. Evan laughed. He got a kick out of that. Car dude goes, well, yes, but that is a photo of a limited edition Land Rover Defender that was made specially for one of the James Bond films. It is quite something. Black on black wheels, 37-inch tires bolted directly onto the wheel rim, suspension upgrades, a full roll cage running both externally and internally. It has 185 brake horsepower and 500 newton meters of torque. He looked at us like we should know what any of that means or give a damn. You know, like a toddler who just took his first big boy shit and wants you to think it's amazing. Wow. Neat. How much? This seemed to me like it should be a simple transaction. No. Again. Fuck. Again? Only 10 of these were manufactured. 8 are in the hands of private collectors, 1 is in our museum, and the other one is owned by our CEO, so great. Get him on the horn, find out how much he wants for it. Car guy stared at me like he's never sold a car before. I didn't understand why this was hard. He looked at Evan, who shrugged, because of course he did, because just sell me a fucking car. By the way, that there, that whole thing I just described, that's why I don't like to talk to people. Jesus. Anyway. The CEO was much more business savvy and yada yada boom ching, and I have a car. And it only cost me $500K. Which, yes, is a lot of money. Unless it's not. So, whatever. I glance at myself in the rear view as I'm pulling up to the station house. I look like shit. My eyes are bloodshot and my dark hair is all over the place. I try to keep it pushed back, but lately it's gotten so unruly that this one wavy tress... lock? Ringlet? I don't know. Keeps falling right in front of my damn eyes. I should probably get a haircut. I should also probably think about shaving again someday. I haven't shaved since I moved back to Vegas. I'm starting to look like a lumberjack. Or homeless. Or like a hipster douchebag who's trying to cultivate the appearance of being a homeless lumberjack. But it doesn't seem to have affected my social, aka sex life, so really, who gives a shit? In fact, this one chick told me I looked like Brad Pitt in Legends of the Fall. And even though she said it's her least favorite Brad Pitt movie, I'm taking it as a compliment. And besides, getting a haircut would mean finding a barber, and shaving would mean buying a razor and shaving soap and... yeah. Effort. Evan strolls out to meet me as I'm parking. There's another guy with him that I've met a couple of times. Young guy, baby-faced. Evan is kind of like his mentor at the station. Jim, I think his name is. Evan whistles as he approaches the car. Holy shit, it came. Yup, I say, drawing myself out of the cab. Is it all you dreamed it would be? I don't dream about cars, dude. That's for damn sure. Evan gestures to Jim. You remember Jeff, right? Okay, Jeff, fine. I reach out for his hand. Yeah, of course, Jeff. What's good, man? We shake. He's definitely young. Guy has weirdly soft hands for a firefighter. Just one of those things I notice. Nice ride, he says, which is unoriginal but 100% right. Thanks, it's got a roll cage with 1600 kilowatts of flux capacity. Evan laughs. I do too. I'm super fucking witty. Everybody says so. Jeff sort of smiles. He's either too young or too stupid to get that I'm making a joke. Probably too young. I can usually spot stupid from a ways off, and Evan would never mentor some fucknut. But I do the worst thing you can do to a joke. I try to explain. See, the guy at the dealership, he... I saw this poster and... I sigh. What are you guys having for lunch? Evan and baby-faced Jeff lead me into the station house, and just like every time I walk into one, a swell of memory washes over me. Evan, our best friend Scotty, and I were six. First grade. Our very first field trip ever was to check out the inside of a real firehouse. It was the coolest thing any of us had ever seen. The firefighter leading the tour started a fire in a trash can and then put it out by dropping a newspaper over the top of it. Yeah, sure, now we know about oxygen and physics and shit, but at six, we thought firemen were fucking magicians. After that, we became little goddamn pyromaniacs, but only so we could figure out the best and most effective way to put the fires out. We burned some shit up, though. Kids. As time went on, I became more and more interested in blowing shit up. And then in trying to keep shit from blowing up. Especially after my mom died. Once it was just me and Dad, keeping shit from exploding all over the place seemed like a really fucking important job. Evan, good guy that he is, genuinely just wanted to help people. There was a time where he thought he might try to be a doctor, but then he realized that doctors don't get to run into burning buildings and ride in big-ass trucks and climb ladders and shit. They can, I suppose. Nobody's stopping them, but it ain't part of the job description. And Scotty... yeah. No. Not right now. I'm having an okay day. I don't feel like I want to get swept away in those memories right this second. Besides Evan and Jeff, there's five other guys on the crew at the moment. Bear, I have no idea what Bear's real name is, could be Bear for all I know, who's over in the gym currently bench-pressing the equivalent of a Fiat, is the company officer. He supervises the crew and deals with any shit that rolls downhill from battalion or the district. He's well-suited for it. In my brief encounters with him, he's the kind of guy who, if he said, "We're all going to put our nuts on this anvil and then smash him with a mallet," would somehow inspire you to be like, "Yeah, let's do it." Occasionally, you find natural leaders in the world. He's being spotted by Rod, who is half a foot shorter than Bear, probably half his weight, and scrappy as hell. Honest to gospel, third-generation Irish firefighter from Boston who sounds like a comic book version of a Southie come to life and wound up in Vegas because he fell in love with a showgirl. You can't make this shit up. He's encouraging Bear to push out his last reps.
"Come on, you fucking pussy. Push that fucking shit out, you sorry fuck."
You know, encouraging. I clock Dean sitting over by the engine, hanging out with Gladys, his French bulldog. Gladys is cute as all fuck and represents an evolutionary leap in the traditional perception of firehouse dog stereotypes. "Sup, Dean?" I nod his way. "How you living, playboy?" he says as he keeps petting Gladys. Dean's the coolest guy I've ever met. Evan told me they once had to rescue some people from a motel fire. Dean personally carried seven of them to safety, and then when they checked his vitals to make sure he hadn't inhaled too much smoke or anything, his accelerated heart rate was 60 BPM. Good-looking cat, too. A young Denzel Washington with the temperament of Snoop Dogg, if instead of acting or rapping, Denzel and Snoop saved people from burning buildings. Fuck, man. Some people get all the gifts. Alex is in the kitchen, making lunch, been on the job for 28 years, pushing 50 and can still outrun and outlast any five guys you meet on the street. Normally, the newbie, babyface Jeff, would be the one making lunch, but Alex loves it and nobody's gonna argue. Guy can cook his ass off. I don't shout hello to him because the last time I did, I got reprimanded. "You wouldn't talk to Picasso while he's painting, would you?" That's what Alex said to me. I laughed. He didn't. Fine by me. It smells goddamn delicious. There's curry in whatever he's making. I didn't realize I was so hungry. I'm running on Johnny Blue and no toast. The last guy I don't recognize. Because they've been shorthanded due to some shakeups, some guys have been shifted around from different engine companies, but he's over by himself, headphones on, ignoring everyone in the room. "Who's that?" I ask Evan. "Brandon, on loan from Heavy 44. Wow. The Heavy Rescue guys are no joke. The SEAL team of Vegas Fire and Rescue. They're essentially the ones who rescue the rescuers. "Good guy?" I ask. Evan shrugs in that way he does. "No idea, man. Dude's barely spoken a word to any of us." I lift my left eyebrow. I can't lift my right, don't know why. How's that working out for crew cohesion? Evan shares a look with Jeff. Jeff answers. "Guess it doesn't really matter as long as he's there when we need him to be." I smile at Evan. He smiles back. I love that. In my work with the military, I was forward deployed as the bomb tech for a couple of different SEAL teams, and working with elite soldiers taught me something. There's a perception in the world that people who work in teams, especially in life or death situations, succumb to kind of a hive mind. That's true, and then again it isn't. You can train people and prepare them and unify them to a degree, but at the end of the day, they are who they are. There was this one dude on one of the teams I was with, and shit, I have no idea, doesn't matter, who was a total prick. Absolute fucking narcissistic asshole. One of these clowns who never missed a chance to tell you how awesome he was. One time I asked the team leader if having a dude like that around was hard on morale. He said, "Man, I don't give a shit what kind of fucking dipshit somebody is as long as they do their job and have my six when we're in the suck." The motto for Vegas Heavy 44 is, "So that brothers and others may live." Be whoever you are. Just be there for me when I need you. That's all there is to loyalty. "Hey," says Evan, shifting gears. "Tomorrow's this little fucker's birthday." He tousles Jeff's hair.
"Stop, man, Jesus."
Jeff pushes Evan's hand away and smooths his hair back.
"I'm not a kid."
"How old you gonna be?" I ask.
21.
"You're a kid," I say. "Embrace it. Life doesn't get any better." I'm a truth teller. We're taking him out, says Evan. You should come. Where are you going? I ask. Strip club, says Jeff, with about 10% more enthusiasm than is appropriate. I scrunch my eyes closed. No fucking way. Jeff asks, why not? You can't touch the girls. Most of the assholes in there are sad losers. They overcharge for drinks. And you can't touch the girls. Evan starts, man, come on, it'll be, if I wanted to sit around with a hard-on in my pants pretending that some chick was into me, I'd just stay home and jerk it to Stacy Patono's Facebook page, I interrupt. Jeff asks the obvious question. Who? Evan responds. Girl we went to high school with. Broke his heart. She didn't break my heart. She gave me blue balls like 5 different times. That is what broke my heart. I value my balls highly. Evan continues, anyway, you should come out. You can't keep just picking up girls, bringing them up to your ivory tower, fucking them, and then starting over again the next night. I disagree, I say. I really, really believe I can. You need to develop a healthy social life. I'm super social. You're super slutty. It's not the same thing. Evan bends his head toward me with a knowing look like he's my fucking basketball coach or some shit. Is Robert coming? Dude, have you met my husband? I can't get the guy to go see Magic Mike with me. No fucking way I'm getting him to spend the evening in a dark room filled with fake titties and sad erections. You know, you're not really selling this as a good time, I note. Evan ignores me and continues half complaining about his husband. I imagine Robert will just sit around, drinking Merlot, polishing his watch collection, listening to Tosca, waiting for me to come home and blow him. Relationships. Jeff kind of looks down at the floor, which is adorable. Come on, man. Evan steps in close. Jeff steps back, pretending to look at a piece of paper on the wall. Bro, I love you. I'm worried about you. You're spending all this time alone. You're fucking a different girl every night. I didn't fuck one last night, pretty sure. You need to find an anchor, man. And you think I'll find that in a strip club? Dude, I just think you'll have a chance to hang out with some friends, tell some of your dumb jokes, fuck you, and just, like, have some fun. Come on. I've known you a long time. Come out with us. We understand, bro. We get it. He takes me by the shoulders and gives me a deep, meaningful look square in my blue eyes that are rimmed with bloodshot red and are now starting to fill with tears, which is monumentally unexpected. Did you want me to come here to trick me into an intervention? I joke. He grips my shoulders tighter, stares into me harder, and doubles down. We get it. He says, gravity dragging down the earnestness of his tone. God damn it. I don't want to cry. Not here. Not in the middle of the fucking firehouse. Not with Jeff and Bear and Rod and Dean and Alex and new guy Brandon all here. I choke it down, swallow it back, and nod my head almost imperceptibly. Evan slaps my shoulder. Good deal, he says. Let's eat something. I hang back for a second, trying not to cry, pretending to respond to a text, as Evan moves toward the dining table. Just as Alex starts to bring out what looks like Indian food, I knew I smelled curry, a call comes in. The alarm rings, everyone's phones start blowing up, and all 7 of them jump to get into their gear. The whole process is lightning fast, and before you know it, they're onto the engine and pulling out. As he darts past me to jump into the cab, Dean says, Yo, brother, watch Gladys for me till we get back. Thanks, man. And then, they're gone. It's shockingly quiet after the sudden mayhem, except for the fact that I can still hear the alarm, even though it's stopped. I approach Gladys. She backs away, cowering. I don't blame her. I sit down in front of steaming plates of food abandoned at the table. I'm hungry. Alex made it. I should try. I take up a fork and attempt to eat a bite. My hand is shaking. I work to steady it. I can't. I put the fork back down and sit alone in the eerie quiet of the empty firehouse with the faint, tinny squeal of a phantom alarm still vibrating inside my brain. I take two deep, shaky breaths, and then I go ahead and give up, allowing the tears to fall while Gladys cocks her head and eyes me with a mix of suspicion, curiosity, and what feels like pity.
Chapter 4. Maddie. The card throws me right off my game when I come home from meeting with real estate agents. Of the six I met with today, only one of them had any interest. Most of them already have this service with someone else, someone more experienced, someone they trust and probably go out and have drinks with every now and again. But I decide to see the positive side of things. I have 10, possibly 11, people lined up, and that means this aerial photography business might just be the one. In fact, I know it is. I can feel it. But that fucking card. Annie, Caroline, and Diane are sitting under umbrellas by the pool. That's pretty much the only thing this house has going for it. It's got a nice pool. It's even painted that cool blue color. Tahoe blue, I think it's called. And it's got a stone deck and just a touch of custom rock with a trickle of waterfall out near the deep end. Ever since Annie copped to what her real job is, I've tried not to think too hard about it. Because why should it matter? They were fucking men for money before I found out about the lie, and they're fucking men for money now, too. But it bothers me. Something about it bothers me. And the way she acted that night, telling me about how she wants to leave Vegas. It puts ideas in my head, like maybe I'd want to leave Vegas, too. If I had anywhere to go, that wouldn't be a lateral move. If it wouldn't feel like giving up. I grab a Corona from the fridge as I try to put the card out of my mind. I know what it is. A bad omen. A reminder that things might be bad now, but they can always get worse. Like buzzards circling over a half-dead man at twilight. Something I do not want to think about right now. So I cut a wedge of lime and force it through the bottle of my beer. Enjoy that little spritz of fizz. Take a long draw and... yeah... that fucking card is still calling my name. It's from my mother. There's an anniversary coming up. Not the happy kind, hence the card. Fuck it. I grab the envelope, rip it open, and read. Thinking of you, it says on the outside. There's a pretty pastel picture of flowers and kittens. Kittens? Really? Surely it's not that bad, right? Inside it says... come visit us soon. We love you, Mom and Dad. Which is sweet. They're in France. Monaco, to be exact. Like, pretty much the best place to be if you have to be in France. My dad used to work for a big casino here in Vegas, but 6 years ago he got this offer, and it was too good to pass up, so off they went. I had just started my sophomore year in college by that time, and after I managed to make it through freshman year and how awful that all was... I wanted to try to see it through because I didn't think things could possibly get worse. I was wrong, of course, but at the time... and besides, I'm stubborn. I'd like to think stubbornness is my great superpower. My parents wanted me to come, I think. For them, it was also a chance to get away, make a fresh start, put everything that happened behind. That's kind of who they are. Their way is to sweep the ugliness of life under the rug. But I just couldn't. It seemed to me like it would be disrespectful somehow. So I don't necessarily blame them for going, but I don't think I took fully into account how hard it would be all on my own. Because if I'm being truthful, I don't know that I realized it really would be all on my own. But it's okay, because things are going well for me. I'm on the right track now. The perfect track. Aerial photography is practically my dream. Or so I tell myself. This is Monday, the start of a brand new week, and there's nothing I like more than a fresh start. So, I will not read between the lines with this card. But then I see what else is inside the envelope. It's another card. Not the sympathy kind, but the business kind. I read the name. God, I know her. Personally. The little note on the back in my mother's handwriting that says, just call her, give it a few weeks, I'll even pay for it. I guzzled down the rest of my beer before throwing it and the cards into the trash. Fuck Monday. I change into my bikini, put the rest of the six-pack into a cooler, and go outside to bake in the sun with the girls. Fresh Start Tuesday is my new motto. Mondays are for forgetting. Tuesday, I'm cruising down Flamingo, going to meet this guy who puts on a drone class for newbies. It's incredible how people make money in the 21st century. Meanwhile, me and my roomies are all engaged in some form of the world's oldest profession. I'm not sure if that makes us classic or obsolete. I'm at a red light just minding my business when I get a message that the class has to be postponed. He got strep throat or something. So I go buy shoes instead. Nice, high, break-your-ankle stripper shoes that set me back all of last weekend's stripper pay. Wednesday, I pull myself together, manage to stay away from both the mall and the Coronas, and make one more potential business contact, which should make 12, but three people have already left messages and canceled our appointments for a complimentary 5-minute video. So now I'm down to 9. One step forward, 2 steps back. I start doing research for other business opportunities, just in case. I like a good backup plan. Thursday, I hang out with the girls at the pool again, only this time I don't get drunk and ignore them. Annie is cool, but Diane and Caroline don't seem to like me, so I'm calling this Make an Effort Day. I think I need friends. I don't have many friends, not the real kind. Not the childhood kind, which is weird now that I think about it, because I was born and raised in Vegas, have never lived anywhere else, in fact. I, admittedly, drove most of them off after the tragedy that requires my mother to send me thinking of you cards every year. Who's making dinner? Diane asks. She's got a buzz on, I can tell. Her face gets flushed all red when she's buzzing. I'm starving. I am, I say impulsively. Burgers okay? I'll grill tonight. I get a round of hell yeahs from the three of them, and then I excuse myself and go back inside, relieved to have a few moments to drop the fake smile I've plastered on my face all week. But cooking is something I can do, so prep work is a mindless task that gives me time to think about things. I don't have my rent money. That's the first thing I think about. I fucking spent it on those hooker shoes, and I can't even take them back because last night Caroline borrowed them without asking, and they have scuff marks on the soles. I have a $12,000 drone that I don't really know how to fly. I have gotten a few videos out of it, but it was dicey, and I'm afraid I'll crash the fucker and all that money will crash with it. I'm also aware that these were all choices I made and that not having rent is my fault. But these aren't frivolous expenses. These are investments. Or so I tell myself. I got a weird text this morning. I didn't recognize the number. I think it may be from Carlos. Or maybe that guy, Logan. His henchman. It was a picture of a clown. That's it. Just a picture of a clown. Which is creepy, right? It is almost Halloween, and it's kind of a running thing. Clowns jumping out at you, scaring people, chasing them and shit. But clowns are still just objectively creepy. I'll know I've really hit rock bottom if I have to perform as a clown for, like, kids' birthdays and shit. Creepy fucking clowns. But anyway, if I didn't have this Carlos thing hanging over my head, I probably wouldn't even think twice about it. But I do. So there it is. Creepy clown text was definitely a threat. Hey, Annie says, coming inside through the slider. Everything okay with you? Me? I laugh. Fine. Why? You've been kind of quiet all week. Just want to make sure you're cool. I'm cool, I say, making the burger patties. So fucking good right now. I got another contact today. That's great, Annie beams. You're really gonna hit it out of the park with this business. You can probably even do videos for tourists and shit, right? Chronicle their time in Vegas, follow them down the strip, maybe? Nah, I say. The Vegas drone laws are pretty strict. Can't fly within 5 miles of the airport. Oh, that sucks, Annie says. Yeah, it does. Wish I had looked up that little factoid before I spent $12,000 on a damn drone. Because real estate wasn't really my first choice. It's just the only one I have at the moment. So how's work? She asks, making small talk. I hate small talk. It's so fucking forced, you know. But this is Make an Effort Thursday, so I smile as I place all the patties on a platter. Great, I say, and that's not even a lie. In fact, the money from work is the one positive thing I'm holding on to right now. I will make back that 12 grand. I will. I must. So I found this in the trash the other day, and I was meaning to ask you about it, Annie says, opening up the junk drawer and pulling out. A card from your parents, she says, opening to read the message inside, which she has clearly already read, and that's why she tucked it in the drawer. This might be an intervention. Yeah, I say as casually as I can. They're sweet, right? Always thinking of me. But Annie's not paying attention. She's holding up the business card that came with it. And this? She asks. I shrug. Dunno. Lies, lies, lies. Annie sighs and then places the business card down on the black countertop. The card is white, so it sits in stark contrast, practically screaming for attention. She's worried about you, Annie says. Not really, I say. She sent that card, right? I look at the business card, try not to think about it. Maybe you should see a therapist. What? I say, laughing it off. This is just how my mother is. She's one of those crazy therapy people. She thinks talking about your problems helps, but it's all just bullshit. Hmm, is all Annie says. I'm fine, I say. My voice is slightly too insistent. But fuck it. I walk outside and leave her in the kitchen. Make an Effort Thursday is over. Friday night was a disaster, and I can't help wondering if Annie showered some of her hate fate on me last weekend when she had her mini breakdown. I don't believe in fate, or anything supernatural, or ethereal, or, well, anything. Except me, of course, because I'm the only person in charge of my life. There's a nice, solid period at the end of that sentence. Nice and solid. I've learned a lot over the years, and every single lesson has to do with self-determination and self-reliance. There is no God. There is no spiritual world. There is no afterlife or grand purpose. This is only life. You get one and only one, so you better make the most of it. That's what I believe in. Me. But this job was going good, you know? And Carlos doesn't even count. I'm still hanging on to the mindset that he's just pissed off that his daughter fucked up and he's taking it out on me. Pretty soon he's gonna come around, see my side of things, realize he's being a dick and drop the whole you owe me money thing. Which is why I bought the drone last month instead of paying him. Paying him a shitload of money that I don't owe him, with no hope of recouping said money when all this is sorted out, is stupid. I don't do stupid. But fucking Annie and her fucking confession that she's nothing but a whoring slut kinda threw me. I don't like to hang out with people on their way down, you know what I mean? I like a winning team. Or, at the very least, a team with potential. Run-of-the-mill Vegas prostitutes are practically what this town is made of. High-class call girls, on the other hand, a little more hard to come by. And yeah, I realize that being a Vegas stripper isn't anything close to winning, but I might have hitched my wagon to something that turned out to be bogus. I'm annoyed with her. And last night's take sucked. Pretty bad. I came out barely even after paying Raven for my stage time. It's not fate, it's just bad luck. I've been telling myself that all evening, but tonight isn't very busy either, so... Tonight will be amazing, I chant in my head. This is my night. I can feel it. But that card, that reminder from my mother and her stupid hint that I should talk to someone, it's put a little cramp in my style. Yeah, I might be more than annoyed with Annie by the time this night is over, because I can trace all my negative feelings this week back to her. Why doesn't she just go back to Nebraska? Nebraska, right? Iowa? Idaho? Whatever. She should just go be a farmer's wife if that's her big missed opportunity. Why are you rolling your eyes? Raquel asks. She's sitting next to me, fucking with her eyelashes. She's perpetually fucking with those damn eyelashes. Why wear them if they require more attention than toddlers? I'm annoyed, I say. Last night sucked, and tonight isn't shaping out to be much better. I only made 75 bucks on my first act. I can't even pay Raven with that. And even though I'm talking myself into believing that Carlos isn't going to be a problem, I sort of think that visit from his henchman last weekend might prove otherwise. I have Otis on lookout for the guy. He put Drake on the job. Drake is the door bouncer, but I don't have a lot of confidence in either of them. They're big, but you know what they say about the big ones, right? I didn't have a picture of Logan, and the security footage barely qualifies as footage. It's so grainy. So yeah, I'm betting Logan shows up one night, and neither of them even notices. Jasmine comes in from offstage. She's taking Cleo's time, since Cleo disappeared and Raven made good on her promise. So this is her second stage dance of the night, and it's not even 9 o'clock yet. She's got so many dollars hanging off her, I start to regret my attitude with Raven last week. I could use more eyeballs on me tonight, for sure. You guys, Jasmine squeals. This bunch of drunk guys came in while I was on stage, and look! She starts pulling the bills off her body, trying to count them. A whole bunch of tens and twenties. I think I made like 500 bucks off that last dance. 500 bucks? Jesus. I hate everyone tonight. 500 bucks would pay my rent, make up for last night's loss, and if I get a chance to work them like Jasmine just did, I might even come out ahead after paying Raven for tonight. You're not going to wear that, are you? Jasmine asks me as she flops down into the seat on the other side of Raquel. What? I ask, looking down at my outfit. I get it, Scarlett. You're smart, she says. Too smart for us, right? You're a college girl who thinks she has all the answers. But let me give you a little bit of advice, honey. The men who come in here aren't looking for someone to save them. They're looking for sin, baby. Raven walks past behind us, and I catch her smirk in the mirror. Don't miss your fucking cue, Scarlett. You've been pissing me off a lot lately. You're lucky you still have this job. Do you have an idea how many girls come in here every day looking for work? I think about that for a moment. Raven doesn't wait. Apparently it was a rhetorical question. And I don't care how much you don't make tonight, you owe me your stage fee regardless. Now, go wow them with your wholesomeness and make sure they keep drinking, got it? I turn around to smirk back, but she's already gone, and the only one who sees it is Otis. How many drunk guys? I ask Jasmine, ignoring Otis's confused look. Like I said, not too bright. Enough, she sings. And they're dropping tens and twenties for stage time? I ask. She shoots me a look. Well, for me they are, Scarlett. Don't expect to make what I do wearing that. She tucks her money away, gets up, and walks back out onto the floor. I look down at my outfit, internally second-guessing myself. This outfit is kick-ass, I say, sounding a lot more confident than I feel. Don't listen to her. Raquel says, it's not her slutty stockings that get the money. No? I ask, hopeful that I can turn this night around. It's her smile, Scarlett. I make a face at Raquel, who is always smiling. Come to think of it, Jasmine is always smiling too. And she's nice. I make another face. I'm nice? No, Raquel laughs. I don't mean that in a bad way. You're tough, Scarlett. And in the everyday world, people like that. But this isn't the everyday world you're working in. This is fantasy, baby, which means no one likes a smartass and no one likes a girl who thinks she's too good. She nods to my outfit. It's pretty. I love it. That outfit says, I'm better than you. I'm better than this job. I'm above all of this. And ain't no one out there looking for that, sweetie. You keep saying that the girl next door thing is played out, so I gesture to what I'm currently wearing. So this is like a fresh take on that, right? Raquel eyeballs me skeptically. Well, see, I guess, she says. Look, I get it. I've been complacent, but I'm gonna work it hard tonight. Watch me. Raquel just smiles as she bats her newly refreshed eyelashes in the mirror. I hear the DJ telling everyone to thank Raven for her performance and realize I'm up next. Scarlett, Raquel says as I grab the rest of my costume, just smile and be nice, okay? And with that, she shoots me a big grin. Yeah, I say, pushing back from my dressing table and standing up. Smile and be nice. I can do that. I'm gonna make a shitload of money tonight. And with that thought, I slip on my angel wings, fit that glittery silver halo over my head, and strut out of that dressing room like a bitch in charge.
Chapter 5. Tyler.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your service.
At present, my personal space is being invaded aggressively by a drunk, recently turned 21-year-old firefighter in a strip club. Jess shouting at me over the top of ZZ Top's legs, which is so hilariously cliche that it's almost quaint. This Raven chick, I think the DJ said Raven could have been Condor or Hawkwind or something equally stupid, is giving it all she's got, though. Bear and Rod are clearly in love with her. They've probably both already dropped half a week's pay on her and the dancer before her, and we've been here like 10 minutes. Dean's too cool for that shit, which has made her notice him even more than she naturally would, and now she's got her titties all up in his face, which is causing Baron Rod to spend even more dough to get her attention back. It's kind of incredible to watch, in a stupid way. New guy Brandon is just sitting by himself off to the side, staring. I'm actually kind of surprised dude showed up. He's a for sure weird fucker, I've decided. Which is fine, who isn't, but he definitely gives off a chop-em-up, stick-em-in-the-freezer vibe. But then again, Evan said that at the emergency call they got yesterday, he kicked down the door of a makeshift meth lab that had caught fire, went tearing inside, and came back out carrying two tiny kittens like they were priceless jewels. Then I guess Brandon said he'd take them home himself and take care of them. Evan thinks he might have gotten a little choked up over it. People, man. People. Anyway, Jeff must have been drinking all afternoon before we came here because he is wasted.
You're the hero, man. You're the hero.
He's hugging me now. Evan is smirking. He leans in so that I can hear. He tried for Ranger training school but washed out. He's got a soft spot for the military. That's all well and good, but I hate this shit. I don't care that he's drunk. I pull him off me and square him up. Hey, I'm not a hero. And neither is Evan or any of you. You understand? They pay you to do a job and you do it. That's it. The moment you start believing in that hero bullshit, you will try to live up to it and you will fucking die. You get me? He blinks like he's trying to figure out what I'm saying and then his expression changes. I know that expression. It's the one of someone who realizes they're about to throw up. That way, go. I turn him around and point him to the bathroom. He takes off running. Evan eyes me. Give the kid a break, man. It's his birthday, he says. Fuck, I know. I can't stand that crap. From anyone. He's like your little mentee or whatever. You need to fucking educate him on that shit. Evan steps back and looks at me hard. He's got dark, almost black eyes, and sometimes it's impossible to tell what's going on behind them. If we're going with the metaphor that eyes are the windows to the soul, Evan's have blackout curtains over them. If he doesn't want you to know what he's thinking, you will not know. It's one of his superpowers. What? I ask with some annoyance.
Is this about something else?
Like what? I know exactly like what. We both know like what. It's why he's been so all over me this whole last week. It's the real reason he wanted me to come to the station house yesterday. It's why he's keeping tabs on me. It's why he's so insistent that I hang out with the fellas. And as much as I appreciate the concern, I also resent the shit out of it.
He reminds me of him too, says Evan. I don't need this shit.
I really don't. Not now. I'm about to respond when one of the strippers...
Dancers?
Do they call them strippers or dancers? Artisans of pole manipulation? I'm gonna call them that. Pole artisan, for short. Approaches Evan.
Feel like a private dance, sugar?
She's eye-fucking the shit out of him. Probably not because he looks like the more good-looking version of what would happen if Keanu Reeves and Johnny Depp's DNA got mixed in a lab and was artificially inseminated into Salma Hayek. Although it likely doesn't hurt either, I'm saying. Dude is offensively handsome. But because he looks like he has money. Robert, his husband, is one of the hottest shit land developers in Vegas, and Evan is a self-proclaimed clothes horse, so being married to a rich dude affords him the chance to indulge his textile addiction. First time, I thought Evan might be gay. We were 10, and a bunch of us were in Joey Butler's basement slash his dad's home gym looking at a dirty website. This was like 97, so dial-up took forever. You get the slow reveal as the pixels loaded, part of a tit, then a belly button, finally the muff shot, and the room would explode with preteen boys going, "Oh!" And I looked around to share the moment of crotch-shot exultation with Evan to find him eyeballing a men's fitness magazine. Don't know if I grasped it at 10, but in retrospect, pretty decent tell. Anyway, point is, Evan dresses really, really fucking slick when he's not at work, and this pole artisan can clearly smell the money. Why I never upgraded my wardrobe when I got all my cash. Don't want to send up any smoke signals to the gold diggers. That, and I just really could not give a fat baby's ass.
Come on, sweetie, she coos. You'll be real glad you did.
She starts grinding on his hip with her pussy. I can see Evan getting stressed that his $1,000 pants might get pussy juice on them. He gently but firmly pushes her away. That sounds super, but I'm okay, thanks. Some people can't take a hint.
Oh, come on now, baby.
She goes in to pitch him with her pussy again. Evan stares at her with those midnight eyes.
I appreciate the offer, but unless you found some secret place to hide a cock in there, I'm all set. Thanks.
You ever see a dog tilt its head at you trying to figure out what the fuck you're saying? That's what she offers back before she blinks twice and walks away. It's wonderful. Evan smiles and waves goodbye as she leaves. Then he turns to me. I'm gonna go check on Jeff. Don't go anywhere.
I won't.
The hell I won't. As soon as he walks off to tend to Jeff, I turn to the bartender to get my credit card back.
Hey, bro, let me get my card. Tyler Morgan. But, go ahead and just run it for like $2,000 and those two guys I was just with and those guys over there.
I point at the quartet of Brandon, Dean, Bear, and Rod. Bear and Rod are looking desperate and sad as Raven or Parakeet or whatever her name is supposed to be leaves the stage and blows them a kiss.
Yeah, those idiots. Whatever those guys all want, just put it on the card. If there's any left over, add it to the tip, cool?
You got it, Chief. Christ. I hate it when guys call me Chief. Not sure why. Feels condescending. But I don't want to get into it with a fucking bartender at a strip club. I just want to get the fuck out of here and go somewhere with actual women who will at least fuck me tonight for the money that I'll spend on them.
All right, gentlemen.
The DJ is as cheesy as I'd expect. You can hear the herpes in his voice.
Let's get ready to give a nice big hand to the lovely, the seductive, the naughty girl next door whose parents are out of town.
Are you fucking kidding me?
The innocent harlot, Magnificent Scarlet.
kill me. Just get the bartender to bring my card back so I can get the fuck out of here and then time stops. It's her. She's ditched the blue shirt for a push-up bra and almost non-existent panties, and she's covered her hair with an unnaturally blonde wig, but the eyes, the smile, the wings, the halo. It's her. My angel. What is happening right now? It seems like they've plunged the rest of the room surrounding the stage into complete darkness because she's the only thing here anymore. All the light in the place is shining directly on her. Shit. All the light in the universe is shining directly on her. I can't breathe. My chest is tightening, just like it did when I smelled the smoke last week. And my hands are shaking, just like they did when I heard the alarm at the firehouse. But unlike those times, I feel peaceful. I'm at ease. I can't tell if I want to smile, cry, or just breathe. So I don't do anything. I just stare at her. And then we lock eyes. She's looking directly at me. Only at me. She pounds forward to the edge of the stage, fierce, powerful, in control, but still soft and beautiful. There's no music. There's no sound at all. Just my breathing and my beating heart. She walks over to the pole and she climbs up. She hooks her legs around the top, letting her head list toward the ground. Her halo and wings shimmer in the golden glow of light surrounding her. She splits her other leg open wide and she slides slowly towards the earth. An angel falling from heaven. She arrives on the floor with a graceful release from the pole, resting on her ass, her torso lifted, head tilted forward, her beautiful, perfect stomach holding her aloft as, facing me alone, she spreads both legs open. Open as wide as the gates of heaven itself, inviting me to enter inside. And I know this is impossible, but I can smell her. Even from as far away as I am, I have her scent. It's an odd mixture of fragrance that shouldn't be so intoxicatingly beautiful blended together, but it is. She smells like fresh cream and sea salt and cotton candy and sunshine and innocence. And now I can feel the blood rushing to my cock. The inside of my jeans starts pulsing in time with my beating heart. I'm not wearing underwear, so the tip throbbing against the rough denim is just making it even harder. It's like a divining rod leading me toward the oasis that is her perfect body. I begin walking toward the stage. She's asking for me. This is what the dream has been about. It's not a dream. It's a premonition. This is why I have come home. I didn't understand before now what my true purpose has been in returning to this place, but it's so I can find her. Suddenly, it's all so clear. I've heard of people's lives changing in an instant. In war, you hear that all the time, but until now, I didn't understand. I push my way past the other men standing rudely between me and my angel and reach the edge of the stage. My dick feels like it's going to tear through the cloth. I want it to. I want to tear out of my own skin and into her. I want to take her in my arms and press myself deep inside her until we become indistinguishable from each other. Until she has taken all of me deep and I have filled her with my blackness and poison, and together we have turned it into light. She is now on all fours, crawling over to me. No, not crawling. She floats. Her wings ferry her to where I stand. The pulse that I feel in my shaft is quickening. I can feel the churning, urgent need inside me racing to get out. My breath catches as she is inches from my lips now. She smiles, and I'm afraid I'm going to come right here.
I open my mouth to receive hers, but she pushes her lips past mine and lands at my ear. She whispers,
"You feel like sliding any cash in here, baby? Or are you just gonna stare?"